Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening, Fermentable Planet Earth. Welcome to Fermentabody on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. My name is Chris Kuzmi.
And I'm Mary Izette.
And we air every Monday night at 7 p.m. and are also archived on HeritageRadioNetwork.org as well as iTunes. And
so what do we have tonight, Chris?
Well, I want to dive right into it. First of all, in the studio we have Jeffrey Katrensik, the Viking Brewer.
Hello.
How you doing? Thanks for coming up.
That's my pleasure. Thank you.
Over the weekend, we had two really incredible events, both put on by two different homebrew clubs. There were homebrew competitions, and that's a real rarity and a real treat for New York City or for anywhere. Like, it just is a large testament to the growing and the rise of homebrewing in the country. And today we have our friend Gary Glass, Grand Pooba. Are you there, Gary?
I am.
Hey, Gary Glass, director of the American Homebrewers Association. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
And you just arrived in Philly for the conference?
I did. I'm actually taking this call from the Nodding Head Brewery.
Yes. Oh, excellent.
The Berliner Weiss is fantastic. Also, the dip fresh dip sandwich, strongly recommended. So, yes, this weekend we had... I mean, this never happens. They weren't conflicting with each other, but there was a homebrew competition put on by two different homebrew clubs. When I started here in New York City in 2001, there's only two homebrew clubs, and recently in the past 4 years, we now have three or four stores with homebrewing, and this is just a testament to what's happening in the country. But you know a lot more about what's happening in the country. Could you give us a little status quo on homebrewing in America?
Yeah, sure. Like you alluded to, it is growing very rapidly. Our membership at the American Home Brewers Association has grown on average by 20% per year since 2005.
Wow. That's a lot.
And we've had some recent legislation this year. So homebrewing is legal in all 50 states now.
In just a few days, July 1st is when the Mississippi law goes into effect. And so both Alabama and Mississippi passed laws to legalize homebrewing.
And Alabama went into effect right away.
July 1st.
Awesome. And then other legislation that's occurred is, I know laws in Missouri and some other states are now allowing homebrewers to bring their beer outside of their house, serve it to their friends, bring it to their homebrew clubs. So it seems a lot of legislation has been going on this year.
Right, yeah. Georgia, Illinois, Iowa, Missouri, Kansas all had bills. Unfortunately, the Kansas bill didn't pass, but all the other bills did actually pass. So it's been a busy year legislatively for homebrewers.
That's fantastic. How long have you been with the AHA?
13 years.
13 years. And so you've been right at the front of all these changes, yeah?
Yeah, and really it's kind of taken off in the last several years. I got involved with getting homebrewing legalized in Utah, which happened in 2009. That took a couple of years to do, but that kind of, I think, like, really kick-started the movement to get homebrewing legalized in all 50 states, as well as a lot of the transportation bills that we've been seeing recently.
The transportation of homebrew from being able to take it out of your home and sharing it with others.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right, right, right.
Because that was a big hang-up for brewers in certain states.
And that prevented a lot of clubs from happening, or the legal clubs legally being able to share their homebrew with each other, right?
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of surprising that there are states. It seems that the states with the older laws, a lot of the laws going back to Prohibition, or the repeal of Prohibition, and before it was even federally legal, some states legalized it, but, you know, back then, around the 1930s, there were no homebrew clubs, there were no homebrew competitions, and so they didn't think to allow for you to remove it from your home. So a lot of these laws are being discovered. As homebrewing becomes more popular and more visible, people are becoming more aware of what the laws actually say.
Yep. Right. Yep. And you are in Philadelphia for the National Homebrewers Conference, which we're all really excited for, and Mary and I are leaving in 2 days for it.
Yep.
That has changed over the 13 years you've been part of the AHA as well.
This is the biggest one yet, right?
This is by far the biggest. We've got 3,400 attendees this year, compared to 1,800 last year. It's absolutely huge.
I'm so excited.
And what were some of the challenges to plan? I mean, when you guys originally, I know you planned these years in advance, and the growth has been so rapid over the last couple of years. What were some of the challenges in planning this conference in Philadelphia for 3,400 attendees?
The planning in advance was a big challenge, because when we were originally looking at the space, we were thinking probably like 1,600 people. So fortunately, the hotel we chose is attached to the Pennsylvania Convention Center, so we were able to work with the convention center to allow us to host some of the events there, which allowed us to greatly expand the attendance for the conference. We were also really fortunate in that I was booking this hotel in the middle of a recession, so we were able to get an affordable price. You know, since the people who are attending, they're hobbyists, they're paying their own way. So we got a $137 room rate in downtown Philadelphia, which is
in the summer,
never going to happen again.
Yeah. And then what can attendees expect? I noticed that on Friday and Saturday, a lot of times there's four seminars going on when there's been only three in past years. I believe we're serving our club is serving at the social night after pro night, and I believe there's three bars, so that's bigger. Mm-hmm. So what else is different this year with this many attendees?
Well, we've got 40 different seminars for attendees to choose from. So there's a lot of education that goes on. But then, we have we also have a homebrew expo, mm-hmm. Where we have I think there are 67 different vendors.
Wow.
From like hop suppliers, malt suppliers, different homebrew supply shops, the equipment manufacturers, just like everything you can imagine.
And that's much bigger.
They're displaying their wares.
And that's much bigger too, because I believe in the last couple of years, there's been maybe half that.
Oh yeah, I mean, last year was our biggest previously, and I think we had 44.
Wow.
So it has just exploded the interest from the business side, and I think what they're seeing is like, this is a great opportunity, because you got homebrewers from all over the country showing up in one place, and these are kind of the, I guess, the elite of homebrewers who are willing to pay the money for a conference and participate, but they all know it's worth it once they've done it.
Jeffrey Katrensik, how you doing?
Good.
So good. Let's ask. So Chris, I've been to the NHC twice before. Chris has been how many years? Three or four?
Yes, four is my fourth.
And this is your first time. So what are you most excited about?
Oh wow, so many things. I just think the quality of the beer first and foremost. I just think there's going to be so many. I mean, like Gary just said, this is going to be the best of the best homebrewers. So I'm prepared to taste hundreds of fantastic beers over the next 4 days of the conference. So that's probably my favorite. But also the lectures too. There's so many quality lectures. I actually spent about an hour today going through the schedule, trying to, there's some time slots where there are up to four lectures. I want to hear everything that's going on. So trying to choose what I actually attend is really difficult.
But. Yeah, that's always a problem. I always get to, there's at least twice during the conference where I'm like, which seminar do I go to? I want to go to both of them, but... Yeah, it's hard. But they're all great, I'm sure, hopefully.
And Mary, you're speaking of one.
Yes, and I'm speaking, giving one,
actually,
so let's hope.
As I was going through, I made sure to put a special check mark next to the one that Mary is speaking at. So that's, which time slot is that?
3:15 on Saturday. So it's the last seminar slot of the conference.
Oh.
So
3:15 on Saturday.
Yep.
Stay hydrated.
Fermenting on
yep.
the flip side. Fermenting things other than beer,
yep.
such as mead.
Right?
This is why I wanted to go to Gary. Like, I love the fact that he makes a lot of mead. I mean, he makes beer too, of course, but I was excited that mead enthusiasts make me happy.
I agree. So Philly. Okay, so I think Philly.
He's trying to get him back on. Yep.
So yep. Philly, I mean, another exciting thing about Philly is that it's a great craft beer town, period. So I think that's going to be another exciting thing that I'm excited about. I mean, we're planning on Wednesday night going to some local bars, having dinner at one of the local, you know, craft beer restaurants, checking out some local places like Notting Head. And I think, you know, it's going to be a showcase for Philly to homebrewers.
And there are actually these pre-conference tours that they have.
Yeah.
There's a four different tours. So like a North Philly brewery tour, the South, East, West. So there's like lots of tours in the area for the breweries. That should be really exciting.
And I know our current president, Ed Karowski, he's designing a Google map for all of us that has all of the local craft beer brew pubs and breweries and craft beer bars that are within walking distance. And there's a ton of them. So that's pretty exciting. Sure. That's one, you know, one thing that's going to be great about Philly is that there's a lot of stuff within walking distance. So you won't have to take a bus or a shuttle to get to these places.
Mm-hmm. I love Philly for that.
I do too. Philly's just a great town, period. I'm very excited now.
Yeah. Philly is where I started homebrewing, actually, at Brooklyn and Philly. No, Home Sweet Homebrew with George and Nancy. And they just were great people and got things started in my world.
So it's a benchmark in your homebrewing history.
It is, absolutely.
I like how there are actually a couple of lectures on colonial brewing.
Oh, yeah.
So no, there's at least two on, you know, how our forefathers brewed. So I think those are some
which is very
interesting
appropriate.
Twist on the lecture series.
And I know Yards Brewery in Philadelphia does a lot of, they do some historical beers. So, yeah, that's kind of a cool, that's something I'm looking forward to. We were going to make a Pennsylvania Swanky for.
What is a Pennsylvania Swanky, Mary?
It's a low-alcohol beer that originated in the, what is the valley? Why am I blanking? In Pennsylvania. But it's basically a low-alcohol brown beer with anise seed.
Mm-hmm. The Lehigh Valley?
Yes, the Lehigh Valley.
Interesting.
Totally blanking.
I'm from Pennsylvania, so I should know this.
But there's Pennsylvania has a really interesting brewing history. They're still, partially because of their beer laws, they have very interesting beer laws, and that you can only buy cases. And at the distributors, you can't really buy six packs except at a bar. So they don't have just beer stores like we have in New York City. Yeah. Or you can't roll into your bodega or your 7-Eleven or whatever and buy beer.
It's been changing. When I was home last, things were a bit different. I was able to go into my local grocery store and find beer.
Yeah.
Which kind of blew my mind, having grown up there and spent, you know, my early part of my life and not being that. I mean, that's just heretic. I mean,
yeah,
you see beer like that, but now it's definitely changing. But yeah, it's still a little bit different than other states. Coming to New York is still a shock. Go to a gas station, grab a beer.
Yeah, exactly.
They do growlers at gas stations in upstate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we have growlers at our at drugstores here in New York City. But no, I think because of Pennsylvania state laws, a lot of the regional breweries still exist there. I mean, the oldest craft brewery in the country, Yuengling, or family-owned brewery, Yuengling is still survived and still going strong in Pennsylvania. So,
a beer that actually
near
tastes
beer.
Different closer to the brewery.
Hey, Gary Glass is back on. Hey, Gary.
No, I can actually hear you this
Welcome
time.
Back. Yeah, I thought it was something I said, and I thought we were getting close to it, but I was talking about how much we share your enthusiasm for mead is where we were going. But
because Chris happened to mention that you like to brew mead.
Yes, I do. I very much enjoy mead, and I've got several fruit trees in my backyard that I use to make my mead. So,
And you're based in Colorado.
Yes.
And that's how long? I mean, did you move to Colorado from?
I did. I'm originally from California. I moved to Colorado. Almost 16 years ago.
Oh wow! Yeah. Was it for the AHA that you went?
I joined the AHA 13 years ago.
Okay, there you go.
13 years ago.
We just saw Charlie when he was in town.
For Saver.
And
we had part of the New York City Homebrewers Guild back in we started in 88. Mary and I weren't members then. But Charlie visited New York, and we had a little publication on a monthly that we put out, and there was this kind of old, I would say Photoshop, but there was no Photoshop at the time, but I think they took a picture of Charlie and had him shaking hands with the Statue of Liberty on the cover of this little publication. It was pretty funny. I got to give it to him. Celebrating good things.
So we were talking about how excited we are that the NHC has come to Philadelphia, because Philadelphia is an absolutely amazing craft beer town. They do an incredible craft beer week. There are so many good craft beer bars and restaurants and brew pubs within walking distance of the conference.
Yeah, I know. It's incredible. I mean, I just walked 5 blocks to get to Nodding Head Brewery, and then from there I'm going another 0.2 miles to get to Monk's Cafe, which is like world-renowned Classic. Belgian beer bar.
Amazing.
It is, yeah. It's extraordinary. And like, just since the last time I was here, we had the Crappers Conference at the same hotel in 2005. There's so many new beer bars and breweries that have opened up here. So it's really extraordinary.
Yeah, how long are you staying for? Are you staying past the conference for any minimal time?
No, I'm. You know, the conference starts on Thursday, so I'm here now, and I'm heading back on Sunday. But I'm going to absorb as much of Philadelphia as I can in the meantime.
Well, you can't tell us this yet, but we're very excited for next year's national. So this is my fourth year at the National Homebrewers Conference, and I don't plan on missing another one ever. It's like a really, really inspiring place to be, and it's really great to see. I love that John Mayer has been sponsoring it for years as Rogue, right?
Yeah, since 2002 was the first year that Rogue Ale sponsored the, 2001, I'm sorry, that was the Los Angeles conference, so they've been a part of it for 12 years now, they sponsor the banquet, and so all the food that's being made for the banquet is being made with beers from Rogue. We have the homebrew chef, Sean Paxton, who I just saw in Nodding Head. He's doing an event here tomorrow. So he planned the menu. It's going to be a Philly Italian theme thing, but he uses the Rogue beers in all the food he makes and then pairs it with Rogue Ale. So it really is a once in a lifetime kind of an opportunity to get that banquet.
Absolutely. How many people are at the banquet this year too?
2,200.
2,200. That's a lot of people to cook for,
wow.
Man.
It is a lot of people to cook for.
Wow.
I think Sean's up to it though.
Absolutely. He's done an amazing job the last few years, so we're excited.
Absolutely. Well, I think we have to take a quick break, and we'll be back in a couple minutes on Ferment About It.
Yep.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Washed rind cheeses are a fairly recent addition to the repertoires of artisanal cheesemakers in the United States. These cheeses tend to be stinkier than other types and are often high on the list of connoisseurs. Now, Whole Foods Market has come up with one of their own. The raw cow's milk cheese, made by Sprout Creek Farm in Poughkeepsie, New York, is washed with 6-point ale from Red Hook, Brooklyn. The beige sticky rind deepens in color as it ages. The satiny ivory cheese within is mellow, with a sweetly tangy bite and a grassy aroma. The current version features 6-point diesel, which is in limited supply, so stop by and pick up some before it's gone. And point of origin cheese is sold exclusively at Whole Foods Market in New York, Northern New Jersey, and Connecticut. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
All right, we're back on Ferment About It. First of all, thank you, Gary Glass. We had to hang up based on the connections that we were having. It was hard to hear him, and he was having a hard time hearing us. But if he works so hard, tirelessly for the Homebrewers of America, and just to change legislation to organize these giant things. If you ever had a chance to meet him, thank him. And he's a really fantastic guy, really approachable, really good guy to hang out with. And Beautiful.
And if you're going to NHC this year, you're in for a treat. My favorite part of NHC, I mean, I love the seminars. That's probably my favorite kind of activity. But just being in a room with thousands of people that share your passion, and they are extremely passionate about what they're doing. So that's kind of, it's just a good vibe.
Yep. I think I've already said this story, you know, on the radio when we started. But I went to the National Home Brewers Conference after having gone to the Craft Brewers Conference. And when I went to the Craft Brewers Conference, I was like, wow, this brotherhood of brewers is amazing. But there is still, you know, even within that, there's a little bit of commerce involved. But still with that, I'm like, wow, all these people who are fighting for shelf space, you know, there's this brotherhood and this amazing camaraderie and support all around. This feeling that, you know, rising tide floats all boats, which is just amazing. And that really stands true in most of the brewing, or all or most of the brewing community. But then a few months later, I went to the American Home Brewers Association. And then it was just like, just hobbyists, just passionate about this. People from all different walks of life that do different things for a profession. And there is no commerce involved. Nobody's fighting for shelf space. They're just sharing a common love for the art of Zymergy, and it's beautiful and amazing and inspiring, wonderfully inspiring. One of the things I was trying to get to was that John Mayer from Rogue, you know, is just there on club night tasting everything and really just, you know, he seems like he's wide-eyed and totally inspired by all the things that the homebrewers are doing. And then that same thing happened when last year, you know, around the floor, Mitch Steele was walking around like, wow, this is incredible kind of thing. And it's just, it's an awesome place to be inspired.
Yeah,
about what to brew and where to go. For example, the Mountain Dew Wit that we tasted last year, which was pretty amazing.
Yeah, or the smoked apple blonde, where there was a guy that smoked apples and then added those to his blonde, and it was absolutely amazing.
There's no
beer.
THC so in these, apples.
There was all, you know, anyway, incredible.
Did he
incredible
smoke
beer.
Through apples?
No, he put apples on his smoker, actually.
Yes. Yes, he did. And then he put it in his beer. Yeah. And there was a Chanterelle mushroom scotch ale. Which
I didn't love that one.
I thought it was delicious. I mean, you can for about five sips, at least.
What are some of the 25 beers for 25 years?
Oh, wow. I tasted some today, actually.
We have some good stuff.
Sour rhubarb, lambic, a orange.
Kettle soured Berliner Weiss.
Kettle soured Berliner Weiss. I'm thinking of all the sours right now. The except
we have
I
a list
the
of
name.
50. I think we have 57 beers going.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So total between our club night and social club. So let's talk about brewing, home brewing in North Carolina.
For sure.
So before we got on the official show, you were talking about how North Carolina has a local maltster now, and you just bought malt from your local maltster.
Yeah, there are actually a few, but recently my friend Chris and I were able to go buy some grain. We bought a sack of six-row pills and a six-row pail from a Riverbend maltery in Asheville. So that's kind of fantastic. It's, you know, grown and malted. We got to see the floor malting being done.
Oh, they're doing floor malting.
Oh yeah, it's fantastic. It's, you know, it's a small place, and the guys just very open and, you know, just talking about how it's done, and it's a very startup like. You know, he was talking about some temperature issues they had at first, and they're trying to change how they're kilning everything, and now it's, I mean, we had to beg for two sacks because he's sold out of everything.
That's
it's just
amazing.
Constantly being sold. So he like gave us the like buddy, okay, I guess I can give you guys, you know, a sack or two of what we have. So yeah, we've been using it. It's great. It's really great to give people a beer and say that, oh yeah, the grain in this was grown here.
Yeah, and malted here.
Malted here.
That's something that definitely, I know that Andrea Stanley, we were talking about Valley Malt before in Hadley, Massachusetts, and Andrea is going to be giving a seminar at the NHC on local maltsters. So I think that's definitely a trend that we're seeing as homebrewers. We're very lucky in New York State. We have Valley Malt in Massachusetts, and we also have a new local maltster in upstate New York, or a new New York maltster. And then one other thing you were talking about is this. Tell us about this wild yeast experiment.
Right. So, yeah. Haw River Brewery is a new brewery in Saxapaha, and they actually had a homebrew competition recently where they isolated a yeast strain near where they're opening their brewery. They put out jars or something outside and collected this yeast, sent it to a lab, and then they actually gave vials of it away to homebrewers to brew with. So when the competition's open, whoever brews the best beer with this yeast, you don't know what it's like or what it's going to taste like, but go ahead, go try it. And so we were actually a little a little behind. We didn't get in on the list. It was oversubscribed, everyone who wanted to do this. But I have lots of homebrewing friends in the area who are getting, I guess, in the process right now of either brewing or fermenting their beer with this unknown wild yeast strain. So that's, there's a lot of this farm-to-table stuff. I guess in lots of ways, North Carolina has this really, strong agrarian culture. So it's coming through in the hops and the grain itself, the malting.
Yeah, do you guys have local hops?
I'm actually growing some hops with a friend of mine in our backyard. Growing hops in the climate of North Carolina is tricky.
That's what I would guess.
Yeah, it's not England or the Pacific Northwest.
Or upstate New York,
So... it is a little tricky, but we all of the homebrewers I know at our local homebrew club, Troub, we have everyone who's growing hops. They're doing well. They're massive, like 20-30 foot vines. So it all comes down to just the weather, the climate for the year, and there are specific types of hops, like the Cascades and Chinook tend to grow really well, and then I guess more the British. European varietals are the ones that are more difficult because they're used to like that type of climate. So it's definitely possible. So and there are lots of hop farms as well. There is some work at NC State where there are massive actual hop farm tours you could go on and talk about how to grow them. So the culture is definitely there. Yeah, so I'm learning a lot about it myself.
Yeah. Now you're in Durham.
Mm-hmm.
So what other, you were talking about farm to table. What other kind of farm-to-table things have you been seeing in the homebrew community?
There's a lot going on. Durham itself was named Tastiest Town in the South, I think, by Southern Living magazine. So there's a lot of... There's a very strong food culture there. Mm-hmm. The breweries there, Full Steam, gets a lot of press. Bull City Burger and Brewery. There's Triangle Brewery right behind my apartment. The president of our Homebrewers Guild, Kyle, is starting up Ponysaurus Brewing. So we're hoping for this the food culture there and the attraction that it has to turn this into another beer town. Asheville is probably the most known North Carolina beer destination.
Mm-hmm.
But I could see Durham easily turning into like a Burlington or a Portland, something like that, where people want to come and it's really taking off.
Yeah, and I mean, you guys have the Triangle City, so it's kind of...
For sure. Yeah, so nothing's
the addition
too
of
far
all
away.
Of those.
Yeah. Nothing there is really too far away.
I would like to go there.
Yeah, come on down.
It's been in our to-do list for a while.
Yeah. No, it's great. I've been homebrewing a lot. My friend and I just built a full Kegel Herm system.
Nice.
So it's great. It's good times. Good weather.
Space to brew. That sounds dreamy.
Lots of space.
Now you're growing. Are you growing hops? Are you growing other things as well?
Some typical garden stuff like lettuce and things like that. But it's mostly the hops that we're focusing on for our farm. So
I ask that because I have this kind of green market brewing project going
mm-hmm.
on.
Hmm.
Do you have a smoker? Have you smoked your own malt?
We
could do that and go there.
Have not smoked our own malt yet. We smoke our own barbecue.
So you should just add a rack and above your barbecue, then you could have your meat flavored malt.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah,
and,
for sure.
Oh, you can make your bacon beer right there.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, if you have a smoker, you definitely should start smoking your own malt.
Yeah,
for sure.
No, that'd be good. Yeah, a barbecue inspired.
Or apples,
beer.
Like the guy last year. Definitely smoke apples or different kind of fruits and see where that takes you.
That's I know. We have
for
to get.
Sure.
We don't. We know. I no longer have a backyard. Now that mm-hmm. I live with Chris in his loft, but we were going to get a stovetop smoker.
That's true, but I don't think that'll work the same way. Get an electric smoker and just vent it out the window.
I think we can get some stuff
legal?
And play with it for beer.
The next step I'd like to do is start.
You had me at smoker.
I'd like to start
however
integrating.
We do it.
I did a big trip across the states, and I was tasting the food from different places and visiting breweries, and I would like to take all those different flavors and start integrating them into the homebrew styles. So that's the next step. Trying to get our process down, traditional styles done fundamentally, and then start adding the twists.
Mm-hmm.
So New Mexico might be chili, some kind of chili, local chili peppers.
For sure. For sure, yeah.
I like that concept.
The spices. I actually got to judge the national beer homebrew. It was homebrew and pro competition in Mexico City last year, and I was Mexico City. Yeah, it was fantastic. And I was on this.
Did you bike there?
Not this time. The previous time I was in Mexico, I did. But I was on the spice herb vegetable, the dreaded spice herb vegetable category, and I loved it.
Sounds like a good place to do it.
I'd get this description of a beer, and it would have spices in it that we didn't know what they were. We had to look it up and research what these spices were. Then it was like, okay, it's a tree. What does this tree taste like? No one knows what it tastes like.
And the description was in Spanish.
It's all everything. Yeah, exactly. So I wrote down all the notes from the really good ones, so I can go back now and try to find them. Yeah,
that's incredible.
It was great. The beers were fantastic. So it's actually coming up again soon.
Jealous of that. That sounds like a good trip.
Yeah. So this is it for this week. We are very excited. We'll be in Philadelphia for the National Homebrewers Conference 48 hours from now.
Yes.
Woohoo!
Very exciting.
So next
Monday,
there's
lots of work to do before you get there. Good
God. That's true. But next Monday we'll be back, and we'll be all excited and talking about what we learned from NHC. Probably have some interviews and do a best of, and share with you guys what's going on around the country in homebrew.
Maybe even a combo, because we have some we still have some interviews that we took from the Craft Brewers Conference that might lend themselves nicely to
Man, there's just too much in homebrew, Chris.
Joes and pros, pros and Joes.
Anyway, we'll be talking to you next Monday at 7 p.m. live on heritageradionetwork.org.
Forget about it, over here. Forget about it.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio.
You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org.
Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.